My guest today, Brian Miller of Navigant, the former Inspector General at the General Services Administration. Brian, it's terrific to see you. Thank you for coming in as always.
It's great to be here. Good to see you again, Francis.
And the Inspector General at the Department of Housing and Urban Development, David Montoya. Thank you, General Montoya, for coming in. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
We start with the values that under which your office operates. There are five of them, and we can walk through each of them individually, but overall, What is the value, do you think, in putting your values out there so that people inside HUD, not just in your office, but across the agency as a whole, and the other people that you work with, understand where you're coming from? Thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank you, Francis. We appreciate it. And I guess to start off with, what I would suggest is that what I'm trying to do at our Office of Inspector General is create what the Ethics Resource Center calls a values-based ethics program, right? And it's the larger ethics component than most federal agencies think about when you think about financial disclosure forms and the like. And so with these core values, it's my desire that all employees look at everything they do every single day with ethics in mind.
The five of these are collaboration, accountability, integrity, stewardship, and diversity. I want to touch on the first one first, collaboration. Under that one, your agency writes, the commitment to work jointly with HUD, Congress, and our stakeholders for the benefit of all citizens. Tell me about the collaborative relationship that you have with Secretary Castro and his team at HUD.
I think the collaboration with this new team that's come in has been very good. It was certainly good with the prior secretary, but what I would say about this particular secretary when he came in and my discussions with him and him asking me where I thought he could set sort of a tone with what he expected in the organization, and my recommendation that he sign a joint letter between the two of us to all HUD employees, saying that he expected them to work with integrity, with ethics in mind, and to certainly work with us and our office in our mission to help the department succeed. And he did that, and I think that's gone over very well.
Brian, what kind of a tone does that set when you have the Inspector General and the leader of the organization, administrator, secretary, whatever, saying together, we're working together as a team? I imagine that's a pretty powerful message.
Extremely powerful message, and that's what Dan Tangerlini and I did when Dan came in after the Las Vegas conference, and we needed to set the tone right, and the two of us, the top leaders in the agency, joining together to emphasize that integrity is important, that following the rules is important, and that ethics is important is a great thing.
What are the successful ways that both you and your colleagues that you've seen over the years have pushed that down, though? Because it's one thing for you and Dan or for David and Secretary Castro to say it, but it's got to filter down through both organizations, the IG organization and the agency as a whole.
That's exactly right, Francis. It's not just tone at the top. It's tone in the middle and tone at the bottom. And you want the tone all the way through. It's very helpful when the top leaders are leading in ethics and integrity, but you need the middle managers especially to be reemphasizing that message. And you need the people who are doing the work to know it and to have it ingrained, have it instinctual.
We've talked before we went on the air, David, about that concept and how there are some folks in the agencies who, when they hear from the IG's office, the hair in the backs of their neck stands up. How do you push that collaboration down in your office and throughout HUD so that folks understand the role is collaborative and we're not here to get you, we're here to help you, and we're here to ultimately serve the taxpayer?
Yeah, well, thank you for the question, Francis. You know, that is the toughest part of our job, I think, is trying to convince people that we really aren't there to catch them. And I think a lot of that just goes with open communication, this idea of collaboration, working with them, listening to them, and encouraging them to come forward with information. And I think we've done a pretty good job with that in the last 3 years that I've been there. We're getting more and more employees talking to us about things, not often becoming federal cases, but just having an ear, if you will, to listen. And I think it's just an everyday struggle that we do that, because often we are going to have to investigate misconduct issues, and that obviously does have sort of a negative feel, if you will. But I think for all of the good employees at HUD, I think what they would tell you is, you know, we know who the bad actors are, and it's okay if the IG goes after the bad actors because they make us all look bad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we do that, actually, it actually works in our favor.
Brian, that's exactly what I heard from rank and file GSA people as you dealt with the Las Vegas scandal, that they were glad that people were looking into it because it tarred everybody in the organization, not just the people who had not done the right thing.
Yeah, there are a lot of great people at GSA doing the right thing. And it's unfortunate they got tarred with the same brush, mm-hmm. painted with the same brush as the ones that really did not conduct themselves well.
The notes that you sent, David, say HUD OIG's role is two-faceted, the traditional federal OIG role of being HUD's internal watchdog, and then also a significant external role. Tell me about the internal role. We'll talk about the external one in a little bit because I think that's interesting and unique. But tell me about the internal role that you serve in dealing with issues inside the organization.
Sure. Well, with regards to our internal role, I guess to help your listeners understand, I think, better about the IG world and culture, I often compare our role to that of a corporation. For example, we act as the corporate compliance or risk officer, if you will. We perform targeted reviews of HUD's operations, their programs, and we try to highlight for those senior officials management challenges and things that they need to address, right? Things that could cause them risk if they otherwise don't heed the warnings. We also act as a quasi-chief security officer, if you will, with regard to our investigative enforcement, where we have the ability to conduct administrative, civil, and even criminal investigations of employees. Mm-hmm. And so in that facet, we do act as sort of the internal risk management type officer for the department.
The special agents that work in your office that engage in some of these operations, Brian's talked about the folks that he's worked with in the past, but they're kind of the unsung heroes of the IG organization, aren't they?
Yeah, often they are. And it's unfortunate that they are, because they do produce a lot of valuable work, especially when you talk about financial crimes and crimes that would otherwise go unnoticed but for our work. Mm-hmm. The other unsung heroes in our organization are auditors, and you'd be surprised just what our auditors can find. And in many ways, they find money that could be put to better use and often find money that should come back to the department to actually go to the programs doing what they need to be doing.
Brian, you point out special agents to me on an ongoing basis and always remind, even if it's not a case that has anything to do with work that you worked on or whatever, you're always the first to remind me there's special agents there somewhere doing something that probably nobody will ever notice.
That unfortunately, they don't get much recognition, and they deserve it. They really are the unsung heroes. We have a terrific staff, not just special agents, auditors and lawyers and forensic auditors, and together, you know, they make the IGs look very good.
The internal role at HUD, then, it sounds like, is similar to the internal role that I hear from other inspectors general across government, David. But the external role, as I read through some of the points that you sent, looks dramatically different just because of the nature of the way that the agency serves the taxpayer. What are some of the key things that you do externally inside your office?
Well, externally to the office, we do much the same thing. We do still evaluations, audit, investigations, if you will. But instead of looking inside the department, we're looking outside. We're looking at people who do business with the department, contractors. We're looking at recipients of the many programs that we offer. We are certainly looking at issues in the area of mortgages and the insurance that the Federal Housing Administration provides and the fraud that occurs in that particular area. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's as important to look external as it is internal. Internal, it's about how the programs are running and could they run more efficiently, more effectively. External, we're looking at more about how those programs are running, but whether those programs have a detrimental effect to HUD's mission.
There's been a lot of discussion, and we've done a fair amount of reporting on federalnewsradio.com in the last probably 6 months to a year about whistleblowers and mm-hmm. and the comfort level at which employees are willing to come to first push up through their chains of command within mm-hmm. the agency's information, and then when they don't see a result to come to the IG office. What's the trend that you're detecting with the willingness of people to talk and the, I guess, the progress that they're able to make in feeling secure in their positions after it becomes known that they've talked to you?
Well, I think the idea or the fact that more and more information is getting out about this concept of whistleblowers, right, and the good information and work that comes from people coming forward has been enormously beneficial for all of us, right? I think it allows those that might be fearful an opportunity to see that good things can come from this. It doesn't suggest that it won't be a painful process as they go through it, but at least there's light at the end of the tunnel, that there are groups and individuals and organizations willing, ready, and able to listen to them, to support them, and we certainly do that. We have a whistleblower protection program that's even separate from our hotline, so people can feel more at ease about coming forward. And we're willing to talk to them anonymously, via email, via phone, in person. We do whatever we need to make them feel comfortable to come forward.
Is it your sense, Brian, that that kind of stigma that goes along with being a whistleblower that existed in the past is starting to fade away as people see the fact that when someone's willing to come forward, something can happen, something good can happen, and you don't necessarily wind up with your head chopped off because of it?
I think it's getting better and better. You know, being a whistleblower is a courageous thing. It takes a lot of bravery to come forward and sacrifice, but it's vital. It's vital for IGs and investigators and for the organization for people to come forward. And recently there has been legislation protecting whistleblowers from retaliation in all sorts of contexts. I know IGs such as David and other IGs have been working hard to protect whistleblowers, to make the hotlines easier to use, and it's essential. And if you're in a private corporation, you should have a hotline as well. And if you have nothing but anonymous tipsters, well, that may be an indication that something is a little wrong. Uh-huh. Maybe they're afraid to come forward, but they're vital for the health of the organization. And one thing that the former administrator at JSA did was he actually thanked people that came forward that led to important investigations or corrections to programs at JSA. And that really, I think, goes a long way when the head of the agency provides a public thank you for people who blew the whistle.
Let's talk about some of the work that you've done that you're most proud of in the years that you've been at HUD, David. A lot of it, as you mentioned a moment ago, revolves around loan fraud. Tell me about the kinds of particular frauds that you investigate and the ways you go about doing that and some of the results that you've gotten.
Well, with regards to our investigative work, we run the gamut. We are often looking at grant fraud. We are looking at fraud in the subsidy program. We are looking at fraud in the disaster relief program. There's so many different variations of the type of fraud that we look at. It's almost tough to really kind of put your arms around. But in the last 2 to 3 years, our more substantive work has been in the civil arena, having to do with... And quite frankly, it wasn't just us. We were working this in partnership with the Department of Justice and actually HUD's Office of General Counsel. And it revolves around the reviews and investigations dealing with fraudulent loan origination or underwriting, if you will, by FHA lenders whose practices led to significant losses to FHA's mortgage insurance fund as borrowers defaulted on improperly originated and endorsed loans. And so we've been pursuing a number of civil cases and settlements over the last number of years related to that particular area.
Mm. The part of that that's the most interesting to me is the collaboration process with you and with the Justice Department and with HUD's General Counsel Office. That's a lot of firepower there, and there are a lot of folks that have jurisdiction over different areas. How do you sit down at the beginning of a collaboration like that and decide who pursues what?
That's a great question, and that certainly goes to a very good example, as you just said, about our collaborative efforts. This isn't just something that we'll do alone. Mm-hmm. This is certainly one of those areas where HUD realizes, hey, we're in their corner. And so we all bring different things to the table. You know, what we bring to the table as the IG is we bring audit and investigative skills that are very familiar with these loan origination files and the requirements of the law. The Office of General Counsel is representing the department, who in essence is the victim. obviously is very supportive in providing the information we need and the expertise from the legal side that they have. Then, of course, working with DOJ to sort of put it all together. So we all sort of have our roles, but together, you're right, we make a very strong team to be reckoned with.
Brian, is there a standard operating procedure for a collaboration like that? And I know they're not always outside the agency. Sometimes it is general counsel and IG, and sometimes it is multi-agency as this example. But is there an SOP for that, or is it a situation where in each individual case you sit down and say, this is what makes the most sense as far as a plan to proceed?
That's a great question. It's usually the latter. Obviously it's in the best interest of the general counsel, because the agency is usually the victim, and the general counsel wants to make sure the victim gets compensated, and the IG, of course, wants to make sure that the wrongdoers are caught and prosecuted, or in a civil case, recovery is made. DOJ has the same interest, and so there are similar self-interests involved. And so you kind of work together for the best interest of the United States as a whole. And it's great to see the various agencies working together. I know that David has been involved heavily in this task force with DOJ. And perhaps you might want to say a little bit more about that.
Mm-hmm. Certainly this is something that was going on before I got here. My staff, before my arrival, was instrumental in what many of your listeners might remember as the robo-signing settlement, mm-hmm. the $25 billion settlement that happened just into calendar year 2012, having to do with, false signatures on files that, created a lot of people being foreclosed on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was the jumping off point for a number of other civil fraud reviews and settlements having to do with the origination, how these loans originated in the first place. And the fundamental questions of whether these loans that were provided to these borrowers, whether these borrowers had the ability to pay the loan in the first place, right? And we saw a lot of fraud in that particular area. And that has an impact to FHA, to their Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund, because every loan we pay out, because they are backed by the full faith and credit of the federal government when FHA insures these loans 100%, that's got to come from somewhere. So it comes from this insurance fund, and that was depleted quite heavily over the last number of years with the financial disaster we saw. So it's extremely important that we show a very strong deterrent message on behalf of the department.
I want to take a couple of minutes to learn more about you personally. How did you wind up as the Inspector General at HUD? What's the path that your career took to put you there where you are today?
That's a good question, because I never sort of set myself up to be an Inspector General.
I don't know of anybody that's ever said, boy, I hope I can become an agency Inspector General when I grow up.
No, and trust me, there's been many a night I wake up in the middle of the night wondering what I was thinking. But no, it's a great job. It's actually a fantastic job. For me, it's a culmination of a 28-year federal law enforcement career. And so I've been a civil servant for a lot of years. I've committed myself to public service. And so this is one of the best jobs, in my opinion, because it allows me to really dig into those issues that aren't crimes, but really go to the heart of how well our government was working mm-hmm. for us. And so, through 28 years and probably five different agencies and just garnered a lot of experience, and I think doing well at what I did when I had it in front of me. And of course, the support of the councils of Inspector General when they are looking for names to forward to the administrations on who might make a good IG. And I think my reputation for a good solid work, and I think you need a lot of really good people skills and diplomacy. And I think all of that sort of lends well into sort of trying to figure out, and then willing to jump into the deep end of the pool.
What are the traits when you're hiring for not just the people that are around you in the office, but all throughout the organization? I imagine the first thing you do is you go to the values list that we talked about earlier in our conversation. Beyond that, what are the character traits or the personality traits that make somebody a good fit for an Inspector General's office?
Well, certainly you have to be willing to live by some very high ethical standards. Most public servants are expected to live by some ethical standards, but when you're in the IG's office, it's even above that. Mm. I mean, it's as high as it can get, because quite frankly, we have to live by those standards we judge others by. And so for us, we're looking for people who are willing to live that, not only in their professional life, but in their personal life. As we've seen too often now with examples recently, what law enforcement overseers do in their private lives can very well affect their professional life. So we're always looking for that. We are looking for, aside from technical skills, we are certainly looking for excellent people skills, diplomacy, and collaborative skills. I think those are probably the most important.
Mm-hmm. What is the state of the IG workforce overall, in your view, not just at HUD, but all among your peers and colleagues across government? Is it healthy? Are you getting the kinds of people that you need who are willing to come in and do the work? That is the health good overall, in your view?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic, and I would say that it our staff, whether it's an auditor, investigator, a lawyer, evaluator, I think they're some of the best in government. We often get people from all sectors of the government wanting to come work for us. I mean, our agents are coming from the FBI, from the Secret Service, from any number of organizations. We have auditors coming from major auditing firms who are willing to take pay cuts to come do this, because as an IG, we're allowed quite a bit of independence. In fact, there's this expectation that IGs remain very independent from all influences in order to do our job, and that we do it objectively. And I think people are attracted to that. People are attracted to, much like those in the media, finding out what the truth is and where does the truth really lie.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to do that in an office of Inspector General, where we do have a lot of autonomy and independence, I think is very attractive to a lot of people. And so we are really recruiting some of the best and brightest that I think our government has to offer.
We just have a couple of minutes left, General. But the topic of the concept of independence, tremendously important in the IG community. We talked a lot about collaboration at the beginning of this conversation. I want to go back to that for just a moment, because collaboration and independence would seem to indicate that then there is a very fine balance that you want to run. You want to be collaborative. You want to work very close with Secretary Castro and his team. And yet you want to make sure that you're not projecting an image, a perception that you guys are buddies and working together in a way that's not beneficial to the outcome of the agency.
You're absolutely right. And that's, I think, what every IG struggles with, is where that balance is. But I think there's a stigma that working with, you know, when I use the word, you know, quote the word with, the department is somehow this bad thing. And I disagree with that. I think we have to work with the department. We have to understand the worlds and the circumstances in which they operate to determine why something maybe isn't working as well as it should have, or what went wrong.
Brian, final thought from me, and then I want to give you a chance to talk to General Montoya. You and I have spoken about independence on a number of occasions and how difficult it can be sometimes to walk that line. When IGs come to you and want to talk about that subject with you, what's the general advice that you give somebody? And maybe not even at the Inspector General level, but somewhere on staff. What's the advice you usually give to somebody in that situation?
Well, my advice is usually just do the right thing. And, you know, if you're comfortable and you know you're doing the right thing, you can defend that to anyone. And sure, there will be people that will misconstrue it. And usually when you're doing the right thing, you have people on both sides saying that you're, you know, as I said before, it's either they'll claim it's a witch hunt or they'll claim it's a whitewash. And they usually claim both, and they always claim it takes too long. But if you're doing the right thing and you're confident that you are doing what's required of you, then you should go forward. You should try and explain that, and in the best possible terms, the most diplomatic terms. And in large part, it's a diplomacy job, because you do have to explain to people who don't want to be audited that, you know, we have to do this audit, we have to do this investigation, and ultimately it's going to make the program better. You know, our goal as an inspector general is to have the agency do a better job every day.
General Miller, witness is yours, sir.
Okay. I just wanted to ask you a question, David. Now that I'm at Navigant, I hear a lot more from the private sector, and I hear some banking people say the rules just aren't clear. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, Brian, that's certainly something you always struggle with in any kind of a case. And I would just disagree wholeheartedly. What we've seen is outright fraud in the origination of many FHA-insured loans. that we've pursued in our civil fraud lawsuits. You know, from the experience of what I've seen, you know, I could categorically say that the clarity of the rules is not an issue. It's really rather what we've shown is these lenders' willingness to submit false certifications to the government, and in many instances, failing to self-report loans that HUD that lenders themselves had identified as fraudulent or otherwise seriously deficient. So I don't believe it's a matter of it's not clear. I think the rules are very clear, much like a speeding sign, 55. That's the rule. It's pretty clear. You know, you either do that or else. And so, you know, I would disagree, quite frankly, with that take.
Okay. And finally, I read somewhere that your office has recovered about $2 billion to the FHA Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund.
Yeah, actually, we've done more than that. We, the staff, the great men and women that work in our entire organization over the last 3 years, we've actually recovered, or at least we've been part of this collaborative effort ourselves, involved in probably recovering something on the order of $13 billion that came back to the U.S. Treasury. $2 billion of that Wow. coming back to HUD's Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund, right? So that was $2 billion that they had lost at some point in time that came back to them. And then aside from all of that, there was probably another $7 billion that went back to communities to help individuals with the issues they were facing with their mortgages. So it wasn't real money per se, but it was money that the banks put back in to help these borrowers understand the issues and the concerns they were facing before default happened.
General, I want to congratulate you on the great work that you're doing, and I thank you very much for coming and talk about it with me today, and I wish you well. I appreciate your time very much.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you having us.
Brian, it's great to see you as always, my friend, and thank you for your role in helping to put all this together.
Great to see you. Thank you very much.